Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Donald Trump's lawyers and Manhattan prosecutors yesterday made their final pitches to jurors in the historic New York hush money case. The former US president is accused of trying to cover up a $130,000 hush money payment to adult film star Stormy Daniels, who claims that they had sex. He pleaded not guilty to 34 counts of falsifying business records and denies any sexual encounter with her. Now, shortly before coming on air, I spoke to US correspondent with the Business Post, Marion McKeown, and I started by asking Marion about yesterday's marathon day in court and the six-hour closing statement by the prosecution lawyer, Joshua Steinglass.
Well, I'll spare your listeners a six-hour translation. we'll try and make it a bit shorter than that. It was marathon. And you know, Claire, I didn't think there was any need for it to be quite so long. Josh Steinglass has a terrific reputation as a prosecutor, very well regarded, and he was meticulous. But I think that he could have done it shorter, but what he got in there was essential to present.
It's always a big risk to take, I would imagine, for any side, so the prosecution in this case, to do a six-hour closing argument. I mean, yeah. There's a huge risk there of losing the jury and confusing them.
Oh my God, yeah. And there were 420 different slides, you know, overhead slides of facts and statements and exhibits and what have you. But I think, you know, Steinglass is pretty easy on the ear. He has a good flow. He's a very seasoned prosecutor. I think 2 hours would have been plenty, because to me, the one thing that he really took a wrecking ball to was the sort of centerpiece of Todd Blanche's case. And, you know, you have to take instructions from your client, but you don't let your client run the defense. And it was very clear, I think, to everyone that Donald Trump was running the defense, right down to the nicknames for Michael Cohen. He's the gloat, he's the greatest liar of all time. You could see Trump there. Yeah, that's my one. I made that up. Mm-hmm. But I think that the problem was that he brought it, or tried to bring it down to, a phone call. So Michael Cohen said that he made a phone call to Keith Schiller when Donald Trump was beside him and said, "Put me on to the boss," and wanted to tell him about the update on the Stormy Daniels payments. And so a couple of days back, and he brought Todd Blanche said, "Look, that never happened. This is perjury. You're a liar. You're a liar. You called Keith Schiller to say a 14-year-old was harassing you. You wanted him to deal with it." So what Josh Steinglass did today, Blanche's thing was, this call lasted for an hour and 36 seconds. You couldn't have spoken to Trump about it in that time. So what Josh Steinglass did was a kind of a mock-up of this call, where he, you know, pretended to be Cohen, and he said, "Okay, Keith, how are you? Hey, this kid's been harassing me. Call her dad. Say that this is serious. I could get into trouble. Can you do that for me?" "Yeah, thanks." And they said, "Okay, now, can you put me on to the boss?" So then he had this imaginary phone call with that Cohen would have had with Trump, saying, "Look, Pecker won't cover it, etc., etc. We're in it for ourselves. I'll take care of it. Don't worry." And it came in at 49 seconds. Mm-hmm. Now, so that completely devastated Todd Blanche's kind of yelling and hysteria. He couldn't have done this in 1.5 minutes. He couldn't have done this in 1.5 minutes. And I think, to me, that was the single most devastating part of his 6 hours, as you said. But there was a lot else, because he also, you know, to me, and I think we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, Claire, I had said that I thought David Pecker was the star witness, not Michael Cohen. And I think that was really proven today again, because when Steinglass went through it, you know, he said, "Look, David Pecker told us they had this scam going. They had this catch and kill. It was all about the election. And, you know, he paid for Karen McDougal. He paid for the doorman's crazy story as well. But Trump never repaid him." And Pecker testified this with no animosity to Trump. So when Daniels came up, he said, "Hey, you're on your own. I'm not a bank here," you know, and that then Cohen took it over. And Pecker also testified that he knew it could be seen as an unlawful campaign contribution. So, you know, again, Steinglass brought all of this up, and they had the documents. They had the notes from Alan Weisselberg, Trump's, you know, CFO, the guy who runs the company, his controller guy as well, noting that these were payments, the Stormy Daniel payment. And again, you go back to, why would he make the payment if he wasn't trying to cover something up? And so I really think that the prosecution had a much stronger hand today. Todd Blanche is not a defense lawyer normally. He was a mediocre prosecutor before for years and years, moved to Florida, became pally with Trump, and decided to defend him. Not a good move, and certainly not for the closing statements, which were about three and a half hours in his case. And he basically said, "Look, Michael Cohen's a liar. And if you can't believe Michael Cohen, and you cannot send someone to prison on Michael Cohen's word, in which case the judge nearly had a seizure and said, how dare you basically say that you know better, and then warned the jury to disregard that. You cannot mention that in a closing statement. You only mention facts, and it's up to the judge to do the law and the sentencing, as we all know. So putting on my very dusty legal cap, I was sitting there thinking, there was a mountain of other evidence that he completely ignored. He just kept hammering on about Michael Cohen. I think the defence made some huge mistakes, just in the presentation of the case as well as in the closing arguments. The first one was insisting that Donald Trump did not have sex with Stormy Daniels. This was the cornerstone, their whole thing. They said he never had sex with her. It's all a lie. She tried to blackmail him. Michael Cohen paid her off. We never knew anything about it. Trump never knew anything about it. Michael Cohen never told him he was doing this. It's just not credible. If he had gone in there and said, you know what? Yes, he had an affair with Stormy Daniels. He really regretted it, and he didn't want his wife to find out. And that's why he made the payment, and it had nothing to do with the election. I don't think that case would ever have been brought, because you would have reasonable doubt right there. You could have people on the jury who'd say, well, I wouldn't want my wife to find out. And 130 grand if you're a billionaire is a lot cheaper than the multi-million dollar divorce, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, but they went down this crazy path that, you know, and at the same time, as Todd Blanche, the defense lawyer, was saying, you can't believe Michael Cohen. He's been proven to lie. You know, Steinglass was able to come in and say, well, look, you know, basically we all know he had sex with Stormy Daniels and they're lying. So, you know, so you had this kind of thing that both sides were calling each other liars, but yeah. Steinglass had a much better case.
We normally have a statement from Donald Trump, don't we, after each day in court. Now, he didn't say anything yesterday. He just made a hand gesture.
Yeah, he looked shattered.
The excuse given was that he had somewhere to go. He had to be at a private event, but you're saying he looked worn out by the whole thing.
I thought he looked absolutely shattered, and he was in there for 12 hours, but we had his son, Eric Trump, and you know, it's astonishing to me. I have yet to hear a sentence come out of a Trump person's mouth that is actually 100% factual. So Eric Trump came out and took up the cudgels, and he said, you know, talking about himself, I've never even had a parking ticket in my life. Eric Trump took the Fifth Amendment 500 times during a deposition. You know, so they have this self-righteousness about themselves. And he said he was furious. His father was being made to suffer. And this upstanding guy in the courtroom was too cold. They all keep whining about the cold courtroom, which is kind of almost comical.
Yeah.
So he came out. And then Lara Trump tries to raise money off the back of it. And then, of course, from the other side, we had none other than Robert De Niro, who got into a near
stumble. That was extraordinary, wasn't it, outside?
Bizarre and very foolish.
What was going on?
Well, it seems that the Biden campaign decided they get a few people down there, that Michael Tyler, who's one of the Biden campaign people, and he brought down Rob. I thought it was really a big error of judgment. So Robert De Niro came down with two of the police officers from January 6th, who have become quite well known as, you know, opponents of Trump, and saying that Trump is not a friend of law and order. And basically he sanctioned or tried to start an insurrection. It wasn't the time and the place. And De Niro got into now you can imagine, this is Mr. Goodfellow here. So some Trump supporters said, yeah, you're washed up, whatever. He started yelling about Trump being a threat.
That's what Trump does, to try to intimidate. We are going to fight back. We're trying to do the book. We're trying to be gentlemen in this world. Democrats, you are gangsters. You are gangsters.
It was stupid. It was chaotic. It was unnecessary. And I do not get the Democrats' belief, after all the proof to the contrary, that a celebrity can swing public opinion. It just doesn't work that way.
Well, back inside the courtroom then, so we'll have the jury getting their instructions from the judge.
Today at 10 o'clock.
They go out then to consider their verdict, and who knows how long that's going to take.
Yeah, you know, I think it could take a while because, as I say, I cannot see an acquittal. I cannot see a jury acquitting Trump on all charges. There's just too much evidence to suggest that he was, you know, in some way complicit. There might be confusion, I think, although I suspect the judge will explain it very, very clearly, that these 34 charges on their own would be just misdemeanors. But when they're committed in service of another crime, and that other crime doesn't have to be specified, but it was said that it's tax laws, it could be campaign, federal campaign laws, it could be state campaign laws, that if they find that, then they convict Trump. Now, there's enough muddiness there, I think, that some of the jurors could find a reason, you know, to be inconclusive. So you could, if there's a hung jury, which means one or more jurors vote against convicting Trump, Trump will have that as an absolute victory and an acquittal. That will be parlayed into an acquittal. But again, I think that there, a compromise could be that they may find him guilty on some of the charges. For example, they may say, well, Michael Cohen created those 11 invoices himself. Why should we find Trump guilty of creating those invoices? They could do something like that as well. But it's very foolish to generally speaking, second guess a jury. I will say one last thing, Claire, that I think one thing the jury really didn't like was the lack of respect that Donald Trump showed to the judge, to Judge Juan Marchand, who is a very well-respected judge within the New York court system. And I noticed that years ago when I was in the law library, that if you see a defendant who's being a bit chippy with the judge, you see the jury's flinching, you know, that they're almost like, oh my God. And Trump was nakedly disrespectful to that judge the whole way through. I don't think that helped his case at all. It's not a reason to convict him, but it's not a reason to feel well disposed towards him either.
All right. Well, let's see what happens. Marion, thank you very much for bringing us the detail on it. Marion McKeown there from the Business Post.